This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome in, everybody. Friday edition of Sharp Money. We've made it with Olympic ceremonies getting underway. A whole lot of baseball action today. Training camps in the NFL. A lot for us to talk about. I'm Ben Wilson in one more day for Patrick. Dustin Sweetelson is here. Short sleeve Dustin Sweetelson today. I do not blame you because it is still toasty here in Vegas, Dustin. You were really enjoying the Equatorial Guinea anthems playing as they as they're riding on the Seine right now in France. I know you're really into that stuff.
Is that where the guinea pig is from?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
But it is near the equator. I think that is where the equatorial name comes
in. Is there a place where guinea pigs are just running around like normal animals in the streets?
I'm sure there's got to be. Yeah.
So we're catching them from that country, bringing them here and saying, you know what you should do? Keep them in a cage and let them stink up your house.
Pretty much. I could be wrong in that, but that's my interpretation. I mean, anyway, that's what we're getting out of these Olympic ceremonies. It's a very bizarre showing on NBC, but hey, we're at least underway with all that. We'll have a lot more Olympic talk, too, because there are some really good events to get underway. Basketball starts tomorrow. A lot of futures to talk about as well. Also, after Dustin's nice little 3-0 betting day on the MLB card, we go to Major League Baseball where the trade deadline coming up, and we get the rarely seen a contender-to-contender swap here. But in all honesty, for both Philadelphia and Baltimore, patching up some areas of need, especially after we watched Baltimore's closer Craig Kimbrel blow yet another save yesterday. And now they get a guy I've always been high on, Sir Anthony Dominguez, has maybe not lived up to expectations when he was a prospect in Philly as a future closer. But, hey, nice arm to get to Baltimore for a bullpen that's been struggling, along with Christian Pache. And then Austin Hayes go to Philadelphia, gives them a nice bat there against lefties off the bench.
Well, I mean, Sir Anthony's a guy who's had good stuff. He's had ups and downs, but also you're dealing from a surplus if you're the Baltimore Orioles. You didn't need Austin Hayes. You have a million bats to choose from. All he's doing is blocking the possibility for a young guy to develop here on the fly. They have so many options they could put out there, and Austin Hayes is a solid player, but they've been looking to deal him since last season ended. You send him over to Philly, and I do think it's a good fit for both teams. It elongates that bullpen for Baltimore, where I still think they have to make a move for a legitimate closer. And on the other side, the Philadelphia Phillies now get the perfect platoon partner for Brandon Marsh there in center field, because you look at Austin Hayes' splits on the year, Ben, and he mashes lefties while Marsh crushes righties. It's a great combination now. He's got an 894 OPS against southpaws this year, says Austin Hayes. In 2023, he was really good as well against lefties. I just think it's a move that makes sense. It's not a move that wins you a World Series, but it just helps you along the way with depth, with injuries. You've addressed both needs with situations you just didn't need both players.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing now. This is, again, very minor moves for today. I think for us as bettors, we're probably looking at teams. You know, there are so many in that category of buyers because of how, in particular, the NL wildcard race is so wide open. So many teams looking to buy in that respect. I think for a lot of us, if you've got season win totals right now, you're kind of worried for those teams in the AL who are just sort of hanging on. And that was the one for me is I know I'm not alone, Dustin. Rays preseason better at 84.5. And a lot has gone wrong, especially off the field this year for the Rays. But a team who's kind of been hovering around 500 most of the year, they now deal Randy Arozarena. He goes, I was having, not necessarily the all-star sort of caliber season, but still very, very productive for a very, very good bat in Arozarena. Goes to Seattle, who is a team in absolute desperate need of a bat. Kind of surprised that Seattle didn't pull this trigger earlier in general here, but a team that has been free-falling, the Mariners tied for the second-worst record since mid-June here. And they've slipped all the way down to 2-1 to win that division, yet I know we both like Seattle coming into the year. Something has to change with that lineup, because you aren't winning if you're a bottom-five offense all season.
Well, they just lost the lead in the division to Houston, right, a few weeks ago. The Arozarena deal I love. I think it's a really, really smart move for them. A couple notes on Arozarena. One, ninth among all outfielders in WRC Plus since May 1st. Since June 1st, he has picked things up, hitting 290, 402 slash 517, 7 homers, 20 ribbies. He's running more again, 9 steals. That's in the span of 43 games. He's becoming that player we saw pop in the playoffs a few years ago, and I think that's the key here. This is a guy who has proven production in the postseason. In a time where not everyone's ready for the spotlight on the playoffs, Randy Arozarena is a guy who's been to the playoffs now a few times. He may not be the guy we thought he was going to end up being, a middle of the order, a stud to build a lineup around, but he's a guy who according to what we've seen in the playoffs before, can absolutely get hot and carry an offense. That's why I like this move. Also, didn't have to give up, if you're Seattle, any of your current rotational arms. I think that's massive. They have so many young, controllable arms. George Kirby, a guy going tonight. Logan Gilbert in the mix for Cy Young. Luis Castillo, a guy that they paid. I don't want to give up a guy like Brian Wu. I like that they kept the depth there because that is their strength. And you know the deal here, Ben. In the playoffs, if you have pitching, you have a chance.
And it's three minor leaguers. Seattle gets up. It's also one of those things where Seattle has, for really the last two seasons, if you've looked at the splits, they've been a team that has gotten hot at about this time, coming out of the All-Star break into late July, going through August, September. You can't just rely on that happening, though, and you've had all this evidence. I mean, we're at 90-plus games of an offense that by far leads the majors in strikeout rate, can't make contact to save their lives.
No.
I mean, if you're betting opposing pitchers' strikeout props over against Seattle, you're hitting it at an unbelievable clip. So you couldn't just rest on your laurels and say, well, because of past results, we are going to turn it around naturally because this is just how our roster is constructed. I think it's smart baseball thinking to say, no, let's actually look at the real data in front of us and get a guy who is obviously on a surge right now and has proven to be a much better second half of the year hitter in general in and a Rosarena.
Yeah, you're completely dead on because the Seattle Mariners have been a team I have focused on total outs recorded props on opposing pitchers.
That too.
Because I feel like that number has not accounted for just the lack of offense. I mean, they just had to let a guy like Ty France go. Ty France a couple years ago was an awesome corner infielder for them, made a ton of contact, and I don't know what happened to his bat. Across the board, the offense has taken such a dip this year, such a step back. It's unreliable. I love that they addressed this because it does look like they have a really good shot to be playing October baseball. And should they do it, like I said, with that pitching staff, with the back end of that bullpen, add a couple more bats. They don't have to be superstars. You don't have to make big splashes here. Just get legitimate major league hitters in there who can give you major league at bats. I think it changes everything for the dynamics of this team.
I loved Ty France a couple years ago. Great fantasy asset. Guy was fun to bet on in props. Good value. And where has he gone? I don't know. Other trade as well today, and we'll keep you posted as more of these come in. We're still a few days away from the actual trade deadline, so expecting this to only ramp up as we continue into early next week. Diamondbacks get some much-needed bullpen help as well. It's a bullpen that has been struggling all year, a bottom eight now in bullpen ERA, bottom five in whip in general for the bullpen. They get a lefty in A.J. Puck from Miami and give away a couple of minor leaguers as a result, both in an infielder and an outfielder, both on the hitting side for the D-backs. And a team who, after a very slow start, we kind of lumped them in with Texas, is that World Series hangover, unlikely to make a move, and yet you look up and the D-backs, they catch San Diego. They're right there in the hunt, Dustin, and it makes sense with how many teams are in that fold for the NL. You're a Diamondbacks team that is still really, really young, trying to fortify things now on the pitching side.
Yeah, look, and I have questions about the Diamondbacks, but I do like people like our guy Aaron Halterman on the show yesterday from RacingDudes.com. He's taking
shot
on a flyer, them 50-1 to make the World Series. Obviously, this time last year, no one saw them making the World Series a year ago. The big issues for them is their best offensive player, Corbin Carroll, and their best starting pitcher, Zach Gallen, are not right. I don't believe either of them are 100% healthy. In fact, I know Corbin Carroll is not. Something is up with that front shoulder on his swing. He has not looked right all season. The power production is not there. Compare the stats. He's missing fastballs. He's not the same player he was a year ago. And Zach Gallen, the stats have not looked good. The velocity has been up and down throughout the season. Early on, it was low, got back up there, then has gotten knocked around a few times now. I have a lot of questions about Arizona, but that does not mean, you know, there's out of the world possibilities that they can make a run similar to what they did a year ago. I'm not buying in.
Yeah, there's so many teams too that have had that what goes up must go down feel.
That is a great way of saying it.
The Mets are really the only team that has bucked that trend so far. I'm just saying, Dustin, Mets are the one team where you're like, all right, this isn't going to last. And yet it has continued. Another win last night, another home run for Francisco Lindor. I mean, it's really the show. It's really your long shot NL MVP candidate who's starting to shorten. Mets are the one team that has bucked that trend, and I certainly lump in Arizona with the rest of those groups where I don't see that longevity continuing. Hey, at the very least, so you get Puck in. I mean, the only lefty they'd even had in the bullpen was Joe Mantiply. I mean,
look,
it's not like you had much, so at least you get another arm there, but is that going to all of a sudden make me believe that that Arizona has enough in the tank to sustain and get all the way to October? No, I do not.
No, people like Puck, though. I mean, the Marlins liked him so much, they gave him a chance to start earlier in the year. It did not work out. He's clearly more of a reliever, big 6'7 guy coming from the left side. There's real good raw stuff there. He's going to make an impact on that bullpen that was really, really bad to start the year. I know Paul Sewald was hurt, right? They were dealing with a bunch of injuries. Ginkel took a step back. So they need more reliable arms in that bullpen if they are indeed going to make a run here. But you look deep down the board, Ben, we're running out of days, right? If you want to take shots on the board to get those long shots, there's not many that interest you. However, I will admit, a couple days ago, I thought the Texas Rangers were dead. And then you look up in the standings now, and all of a sudden, they're not completely out of it when it comes to the West. Looking in the American League West, they're 2.5 behind Houston. And now we're all waiting for Houston to like really be the Houston of old. And I have 18, 19, 20 to one of them to win the World Series, somewhere in that range. But am I crazy for thinking the Texas Rangers one game below 500 here? They are 60 to one over at DraftKings to win the World Series. That is a team I would rather buy stock in than buy stock in the Arizona Diamondbacks.
And if you are like, they're the team, if you want to bet on them, you don't bet them to make the postseason or even to win the division. Because of the track record Bruce Bochy has as a manager, you just take the big shot. I mean, it's been unbelievably well documented. Bruce Bochy just does not lose playoff games, no matter what team, whether it's San Francisco, whether it's Texas. That's probably the perfect example. I would rather do that where the runway and the outcome is much more clear. Like, to get in, Texas is going to have to win that division, and there's two teams they have to beat. A team like Arizona, I mean, there's, what, half the league basically still alive for the wild card. You obviously are not winning that division. Yep. You're going to have to go the hard way through likely the 3 seed in the wild card, maybe the 2 if you're lucky. And at 50 to 1, it's not the same bang for your buck as you get with Texas. Having said all that, do I believe in the Rangers? Not really.
Quick note, Francisco Lindor, 25 to 1 for NL MVP last night.
19.
It's now 19
to 1. There we go. Big show for us here on Sharp Money. We'll talk a little NFL training camp and also preview our guests when we come back. Some news on Dak Prescott, Jerry Jones, and the Dallas Cowboys.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Right now on VSIN.com, all of the Olympic odds breakdown. Zach Cohen on the tennis, Wes Reynolds on the golf, Jonathan Von Tobel on men's basketball. As we are into the opening ceremonies, we're watching it right now from the Seine in Paris. Also, the Saratoga Del Mar horse racing picks from our guy Mike Somich for the rest of the day today, all along with betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. Liechtenstein was just introduced. One athlete for Liechtenstein this year.
Corey?
No.
Corey Liechtenstein? Legend?
Not quite.
It's not Corey Liechtenstein?
It's not. No, he's not representing Liechtenstein. I'm surprised. Moldova had 32 athletes. It's impressive. I think it would be awesome if you're in one of these. Like, you're either in the very first event or the very last event. You just get to chill in Paris for like 2 weeks and just hang out, you know, party. I guess it would be better if you were in the first events that go off. Like, the archery, I think, is already gone, or at least started. You just get your one event out of the way, and then it is a party in Paris.
Have you seen some of the videos of how these elite athletes around the world are conditioning and sleeping, you know, post-workouts?
No.
The frames of their beds are made out of cardboard.
That, unfortunately, checks out based on the IOC.
Now, I imagine Team USA Basketball is not doing that. I would kind of assume if you're going to get star power and men of that size. But I did see on social media, like, they do all this thing in the Olympic Village. All these people are tweeting out all their and TikToking out videos from inside. And like, yeah, this is how we recover. We come back. Our bed is just a mattress on these cardboard things that are
hilarious,
meant to look like a frame. And I'm like, look, I'm not trying to get in their personal lives, but there tends to be some D1 breeding going down there in the Olympic Village, is what I'm told. I'm told Tinder is very active. Feels like a lot of replacement cardboard boxes coming their way.
Interesting. Or so we have heard from the past. Hey, at least they didn't displace like thousands and thousands of migrant families to build those. So that's a good
thing. Did they?
Well, in Rio, that was the famous thing.
Well,
they just like, we're like, all right, poor people, you guys are done. We're just raising your entire community. They just built all these things that are now just ghost towns. There's a lot of corruption there.
Yeah, it does feel like there's always like an overarching like corruption story with every Olympics.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So at least Paris, well, the big thing was the they originally wanted to do the swimming in the river, which is notoriously unbelievably polluted.
Yeah.
And there was a whole thing where people in France orchestrated this giant attempt to defecate upstream so that in protest, so it would go down to the river, because the mayor claimed she would swim in the river to prove that it was not dirty. So
drink it.
Viva the French. Way to go. Only in France could they do that. We do have some news coming out here right now as far as some of the extensions going on in NFL. We were presuming that these would eventually happen, but the latest report here, just pulling this up from Adam Schefter, tweeting that the Tua Tagovailoa deal has been done. So that is a four-year, $212 million extension, according to Schefter of ESPN. That is done for Tua. The wait is now over. We can now the debate, though, even though the deal is done, Dustin, that debate is just getting started.
Okay, he is now the highest-paid quarterback, right? In the league, right? Is that where he's at? Or is he, he's behind Burrow still. He is a little bit. It goes Burrow number one at 55. Lawrence number two, tied at 55.
53.
And then two of 53.1.
And we assume Jordan Love is going to get more than all of those. The assumption is Love is going to be in the 55, 56 range when Green Bay gets his deal. But there you go. Tua, he's signed.
Tua's a delicate subject for a lot of people.
Which is weird because, I don't know, because he's lefty. I mean, the numbers are good. The protection, when it's been good, he's been great. When the protection has been bad, Tua has sucked. But that seems to be why it's such a polarizing thing.
Well, I don't like when people create this narrative of, well, you really got to coach him up. Okay, show me the quarterback doesn't have to be coached up. Show me the quarterback who doesn't go to a better offensive coach and then improve on their game, right? Tua is now paired with Mike McDaniel, who is an offensive mastermind. He's a perfect fit for him, and he's doing the system he's being taught. He knows it in and out. He's a perfect fit for really – he's. Anyone who's innovative, Tua's going to work with because he's accurate, right? Because he can complete a lot of those short passes. That is the new age of the NFL. And he's been given weapons in Waddle and Tyreek Hill, who can take those short passes a long way. And then when you start defending that, he'll hit you over the top. I think Tua is actually underrated. I think we have a problem with NFL quarterbacks where the narrative becomes so overwhelming that people aren't buying what Tua can be. I've created a binary system, Ben, and maybe we'll get into this a little bit later. The only way you pay a quarterback is if he's on one side of this debate. Can he win a Super Bowl? And when you look at Tua, there's no doubt in my mind you can win a Super Bowl with Tua.
Every number, analytically, top five quarterback last year. What are the big issues for Miami? It's not Tua Tagovailoa. It's not the weapons around him. It's offensive line that has been plagued by injury time and again, and we have seen in the back half of seasons when the offensive line goes and teams ratchet up the pressure, and if there is injuries on the wide receiver front where the separation isn't the same, all of a sudden, Tagovailoa looks like a vastly different quarterback. You also have to wonder about a front seven that lost a lot. You have Jalen Phillips coming back from serious injury, and you lost one of the best DCs we have seen in recent years in Vic Fangio. That's the question for Miami. It is not at all about the effectiveness of Tua Tagovailoa, who I still firmly entrench, even though, look, maybe is he as good as the top five numbers suggest? Maybe not, but he's still an upper echelon, your top 12 quarterback we have in the NFL.
Well, and they're going to have to win some shootouts this year. I really, really question this defense. You mentioned the Fangio thing, but Christian Wilkins made everything happen around him because you had that force in the middle of the defensive line that allowed all these other guys, because he's commanding so much attention on every snap, to do their thing. And on top of that, two of the guys you need to do their thing, which is get after the quarterback. You can't win unless you do that in today's NFL. Well, you have Bradley Chubb coming off an injury. You have Jalen Phillips coming off an Achilles injury.
Yeah.
I don't know where the explosiveness is going to be for either of those players here coming off that. Without Wilkins getting the push up front, this offense is going to have to put up monster numbers. And a year ago, they did a really good job of that. However, I would say, a lot of the overall statistics that the offense did, let's keep in mind they dropped 70 points against Denver in week 3. So that's been a bit of an
outlier. You have to keep that in mind.
Help pad those stats a little bit, baby.
Will we get the throwback year from Calais Campbell? I mean, that when you're asking those questions, it's not 2013 anymore. I mean, it's not more like 2018, but that's kind of how you feel.
He might have been in the NFL in 2013. I think you're right. Calais Campbell, what year was he drafted?
I think he was. Anyway.
He's 37 years old, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's been around.
Three years away from being a man. He was drafted in 08. Yeah. Where were you in 08? High school?
Yeah.
I graduated college.
You were graduating college. 08, great year. Brewers snapped their 25-year playoff drought in 08.
Wow, these are the things you live for as a Milwaukee Brewers fan, huh?
Yeah, but once every 25-year stretch there in Milwaukee. And then Andrew Van Ginkel, the other loss, had a career year.
Yeah.
He's now gone from Miami. It's going to take some time for that defense. And just, you know, Anthony Weaver is a new DC coming in. A lot more questions and answers right now for Miami. Having said all that, the schedule is relatively favorable. It's a eighth easiest strength to schedule in general here. They have a lot of tough weeks where the opponents have extra rest against them. Sixth worst rest edge in the NFL. But in general, outside of the Jets, it's a very favorable schedule. Look at Mike McDaniel as a really solid, innovative offensive coach. It's a classic roster, Dustin, that has all the makings of a very, very good regular season team once again that you still have very, very significant doubts on once the weather gets cold, once they have to prove it in the postseason. But regular season-wise, there's no reason for me to believe this is not going to be a team that is right there in the AFC East.
Well, that's why if you're going to back the Miami Dolphins right now to win the Super Bowl, your belief is that they can be a top seed and host playoff games. Because they're not going on the road in cold weather. You're going to have to get lucky with a dome matchup with this team. They are not winning in the cold, especially if there's snow, when it matters late in the year.
I'd rather just bet them. Yeah, you can get 10-1 on the number one seed for Miami versus 11-1 to win the AFC. Which bet would you rather make? It's definitely the former there on the number one seed odds for Miami. And we talked some power ratings early. I was surprised. I thought I'd be down on Miami coming into this year, but with how elite the most important skill position players are, running back, wide receiver, those are top three units individually in the NFL, a very good quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa. You're looking at a team that I ended up cracking my top five to start the year. Now, again, that's to start the year. I don't believe it will last as we get into the postseason, but certainly with all the hype being given to the New York Jets, I put the Dolphins roster, while it is certainly not as good as the Jets, the other underlying variables, the coaching, the schedule, some of the situational angles for Miami this year, put them, to me, just slightly above the Jets, who, it's a very, very tight, narrow margin to parse through. But nobody's talking about Miami. Everybody's talking about the Jets, feels like, coming into this
look,
year.
I'll talk out of both sides of my mouth after questioning some things with the defense. I'd also say that maybe there's a chance we put too much emphasis on defense in today's NFL, simply because everything about the rules are geared to more offensive production. So essentially, we're looking at an AFC where if you want to win, you got to be able to go shot for shot with Patrick Mahomes, with Joe Burrow, with Lamar Jackson. You have to do that with a franchise quarterback. You have to do that with a high-octane offense. Miami has all the pieces there. They can kind of play any style they want on offense with the depth at running back. A-Chain, I think, is going to have a monster year. Mostert has been remarkably consistent, especially for an undrafted guy. And I do think they deserve a little bit of credit. They attempted to address this offensive line in the offseason, and it should be better. So while I'll knock the defense for everything it lost, I do believe in today's NFL, especially in the AFC, you have to be able to go shot for shot with the elites. They have the weapons to do so.
And the margins are so small. I mean, all three of those AFC East teams, which I have in the top six of the AFC, there are all holes throughout that roster. Some are more greater than others, but the reality is for Miami, it'll be the small margins that impact their success, at least in the regular season. But that's the Tua story. Four-year, $212 million extension for Tagovailoa as he stays a Miami Dolphin quarterback. We'll talk a little bit at Major League Baseball, MLB Dream from FDN Fantasy with us right after this on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money is underway from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. He's Dustin. I'm Ben. We've got a great guest list coming up today. Lots of talk going to the Olympics with a lot of the main sports, the betting getting underway tomorrow. Also talk some NFL, college football. But right now, we go out to our progressive guest line, talk a little baseball. Dustin's feeling good after his 3-0 day. We're trying to get some more insights here.
Everyone knows the more you acknowledge the winning bets, the more likely you are to lose the next
few. I'm a play-by-play guy. We don't believe in jinxes, okay? I'm here to, and you're the exact opposite is a better. Basically how that works. Anyway, he's MLB Dream, joins us right now at our progressive guest line from the DC area. Great to see you as always, man. Appreciate the time as we come out of this this post All-Star break window here. We're starting to get some of the trades. What anything you've noticed actionable as far as this first really week now back where you've seen some kind of interesting results here from some teams who've just not shown up at all to some other teams, say like the A's, who just can't stop hitting, it seems like.
Yeah, who would have thought that the, you know, what month is it? In the end of July, the A's are the hottest team in baseball. Nobody would have guessed. Not so much actionable. Maybe there's a little stuff that if you're, you know, you're plugged to your computer. I mean, stuff like just really quickly, like Nick Lodolo today, we saw his projected strikeouts drop about half a strikeout with the Randy Rosarena trade. Most of the projection systems obviously had Randy in there with this, what, 25% strikeout percent. So that kind of brought some money in on that under. So it's just kind of reacting to the news as quickly as you can.
Sure thing, yeah. And speaking of the A's here, who were talking off the jump, score six last night. Team, they've been favored very few times. When they have been favored, though, they've won almost all those games, amazingly as that is. And they're getting the Angels, who they've really taken advantage of with some of these pitching matchups here. Even though it's not the sexiest game on the card, that is an angle that you are going to attack today.
Yeah, yesterday it was probably my favorite spot on the whole board, going after Kenny Rosenberg, who, you know, not a household name to say the least. The A's crush lefties, and hey, they've been crushing righties as well. They have a WRC plus of over 140, or I think it's actually 175 over the last 2 weeks, which is best in baseball versus right-handed pitching. They face a former kind of big prospect here in Carson Fulmer. He probably won't go more than four or five innings. They saw him recently, knocked him around a little bit, and the Angels bullpen is back kind of in the crapper. They could probably see a couple of those arms dealt in the next maybe week or so too. I'm sure teams are interested in, so that's probably going to get be an, even an area of even more weakness for the Angels going into the weekend.
Yeah, I know Dustin's saying speak for yourself on Kenny Rosenberg not being a household name. That was funny.
You know, we went to Temple together growing up, just kidding. The Baltimore Orioles, they're in your area. I love them. I have them 16-1 to win the World Series. There's something about young players getting better, improving, that I don't think we always account for. And I do think there's a possibility that some of these guys could really get hot at the right time for them. And I know you like them today. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit juicy on the money line. I did consider pairing it with another big favorite, a nice little donkey parlay that we all love. But they have a good matchup here with Mazur. I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly, but the pitcher for the Padres is absolutely getting rocked by left-handed hitters this season. We should see about six or seven in the lineup for the Orioles today, but the slash line for him, they're hitting over 340, slugging close to 600 with an on-base percentage over 450 against him. The FIP is over seven, and with about six or seven lefties in the lineup for the Orioles today, I like them. You know, I don't know if they'll quite cover the run line after what we saw yesterday in Miami, but I do think they should put up five runs or more today.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a good angle to look at, too. You follow him at MLB Dream, always kind to give us some time here on VSiN and Sharp Money in particular out in our progressive guest line. Couple big series here as we go out to the East Coast. It is the Mets against the Braves. Mets get the win last night. Another homer for Francisco Lindor, down to 19-1 to win NL MVP. But more importantly for tonight, it's the return of Kodai Senga. What can you reasonably expect? We've had this happen now a few times over this past week, post-All-Star break, guys making either their debuts or their first starts in months. And it is Senga who gets the ball tonight against the Braves.
Yeah, you're going to love this answer. I really don't have a clue what we're going to see from him. His minor league numbers and the rehab stats were pretty poor. My first thought was actually wanted to bet the under on his strikeouts, even though the Braves do strike out a fair amount. But through his translator, he had an interview a couple days ago where he said he wasn't really trying to pitch his best. He was just kind of working on some things. So as a bettor, I really don't know what to expect from him. Or I don't have really any idea how deep he'll go either. It just comes down to how effective he is. The market was definitely in on his strikeout prop. I'm just not as sure as everybody else.
Great example yesterday. I mean, I was out on Kershaw, and he did not look sharp at all, yet if you faded his K prop, you lost. He had six and four innings. Like, that is the classic case of why this stuff is tough for guys we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, and look, you're one of the sharpest people when it comes to baseball, so I want to get your thought on this, just because, as Ben mentioned at the start, I had a great day yesterday. And what happens when you're feeling good? You start seeing things maybe that don't exist on the board. Went through my bets, placed them, locked them in. All of a sudden, I look, every single one's plus money. Maybe getting a little too cute here, but at this point in the season, where do you stand on going after some of these bigger dogs in these kind of weird spots in the market?
I mean, it's tough, right? Because if you're looking at the baseball card once a week and you say, hey, this is probably a decent spot at plus 200, you bet it, you lose. You're saying, I'm not betting this team again. But if you're someone that looks at the card consistently, you kind of have to take that value. A team that's lined at plus 180 and they should be kind of a little bit closer to plus 150. I mean, yeah, it's hard to get people to bet something that's probably not going to win. Yeah. But again, when you're betting, what, 1,500 to 2,000 bets for seven plus months, it's kind of spots that you have to take. And also, I'm not like, I'm someone that will wait for a little bit of money to come in on the opposite side of I like just to get a little bit better price.
Yeah, so, okay, one of those instances right here. It sounds ugly because both pitchers have not been good lately, but I'm going to back Mackenzie Gore on the road with Washington. You're wearing their hat today. It's plus $1.42 against the Cardinals, where Sonny Gray has also been really bad. I don't think he's worthy of laying $1.70. Also, the Cardinals are one of the worst teams in baseball hitting lefties. It just feels like worth the shot in that spot for me.
Like, I can't talk you out of that, right? It's the only thing that's probably keeping me off of that is just how inconsistent Mackenzie Gore has been. He's one of those guys that, like, I personally can't ever project properly. So I do agree with you that there is value on Washington there. Like, if you made me bet that game, I'm probably plugging my nose and taking the Nats. I'm definitely not laying the minus 165 with St. Louis there. So I totally agree.
Sure thing. As far as some of these big market teams, I've really noticed last couple weeks, this goes back to, you know, a few days before the All-Star break, Yankees, Dodgers, consistently now getting bet against in the market. Dodgers, we've had some moves of 25, 30 cents. I don't understand it with the Dodgers. I'm on them too with Gavin Stone today against Framber Valdez. If we start with the Dodger piece, then we'll transition to the Yankees in a second here. Where do you see that coming from, A, and B, how real do you believe that actually is as far as a potential buy low team that weirdly now, for a team as big as the Dodgers, continues to get disrespected and bet against in the market?
It probably is a decent buy low spot. And just going back a little bit to the start of the season with the Dodgers, they were a team that the second you saw them at a four and a half team total, it was an auto bet. Yep. They were just going to get there. The issue with them is not only have they had a bunch of injuries, the only real threats in the lineup, Teoscar's having a great year, but Ohtani and Freeman, if you have a pitcher that kind of nullifies lefties, like, that lineup is going to have a lot of trouble, especially with that bottom half, bottom third, does not look like a World Series favorite lineup.
I would love to get your thought on this, because Ben and I were kind of lamenting the fact that you can have a read on a starting pitcher and want to bet a prop on them, but choose the wrong prop. Can you help us with your process of identifying, I like this pitcher and I'm going to go outs recorded, or I'm going to go K's, or I'm going to go walks? Like, how do you go through your process?
Dude, that's what makes baseball so hard, right? It's like, you could have the best read, but you have to know how to execute. There's so many different ways to attack guys. A quick example is with the Reds today. I didn't know if I wanted to bet them first five money line or on the team total for the full game, just because Baz has had so much struggles with lefties and the Reds are crushing righties. So there's a lot of factors that come into play, right? Price, has there been maybe a bigger adjustment over the last week or two given their recent performances? And I don't want to say it's a crapshoot, but you're essentially trying to pick your biggest perceived edge. There's not an exact science to it. You can go straight off the numbers, which I don't really always like to do. There is some gut involved in this, especially when you're betting and looking at these games every single day for 6+ months. I think it's part of it is just you just have to guess and try to assume that your projection is ideal.
No doubt. It's easier said than done, but that's part of what drives us crazy, betting baseball day to day. He's MLB Dream. You see him on an FTN Fantasy, their MLB analyst. One other game to get your thought on here for tonight. It's the Yankees, similarly to the Dodgers, getting bet against consistently in the market, and for good reason, at least with the pitcher tonight, Nestor Cortez, who's really fallen off as the weather has gotten warm into summer. A lot of fly balls, a lot of balls out of the park, and you're in one of the best hitting parks in MLB in Boston tonight. What do you make of the spot here with the Red Sox trying to cling to one of those wild card spots, and the Yankees just trying to cling to anything, get some momentum back in their favor?
Right. The Yankees are a little bit like what we described with the Dodgers, and maybe it's not so much injuries with them, but it's two guys that you have to kind of avoid. I mean, we saw what the price was on Judge to get walked a couple games ago. I think I saw minus 200 or worse. So you just kind of have to navigate through those two guys, and against the Red Sox offense, that is a lot better than people assume this year. In his last start versus the Red Sox, Cortez really increased his slider usage, got a bunch of Ks. I lean the Yankees here on the money line. I don't want to touch that, maybe because there's a lot of variance. I'm trying to find someone to pair Cortez with and getting 5+ strikeouts at around even money. The strikeout market is so sharp and it's so tight that when these guys are projected at 5.5, it's kind of safe to assume most of the time that they will get that floor of 5. And I just try to kind of find a pair with him on another strikeout I like. I looked at Singer a little bit at 4+, but with the first game of the series, I was telling Dustin this, I like waiting for the umpires, some lineups, sure, because a big difference in the umpire could be the difference between you winning and losing a bet.
It's a great actionable tip as well as we go out. He's MLB Dream. Follow him at MLB Dream. Good to see you as always, man. Appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
We'll have some more MLB talk a little bit later, but to the Dallas Cowboys, some of their latest news around quarterback Dak Prescott when we come back on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our new look, VSIN.com, which is optimized for mobile and has all of our best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. You can check out full links to our Major League Baseball bets from Steve McAdam, Adam Burke, everybody on the crew, VSIN.com for the rest of the baseball card today. Also, all of our Olympic breakdowns as well. They are still doing the opening ceremonies. Tuvalu just got announced. I have no idea where that is, Dustin.
Finally, there's a country you haven't heard of.
I don't know what Tuvalu is, but United States about to be up. But people are having to sit through the
entire... It's Tori Lovello, not Tuvalu.
Oh, okay. Tori Lovello. Be great. Ukraine getting announced. I'm always fascinated how many, some of these smaller countries, like Tuvalu, like two athletes, like where, like it's impressive that they even get, that they have representation in the first place.
It's two people in the whole country.
Get to, yeah. Imagine being the flag bearer. You're
so
just you.
Hold on. If I start my own country, can I qualify for the Olympics?
Like you gotta be, I think you gotta bribe somebody first at the IOC to be.
Well,
you
know, seems like that's very possible these
days.
That
is very possible, and then you're kind of in the. I think you're in the ballpark. What would be your Olympic sport?
Ooh, napping.
How would that work?
I'd be like gymnastics. You judge the quality of my nap. There's judges.
So you, I mean. Big element of that is how fast can you fall asleep and nap, and it's probably got to be like random location too. Like,
no,
can you take a nap like on a subway?
That would be the sprinting version of napping. I'm more of a marathon type napping. Like how long can I go at once? That type of deal.
Okay,
interesting. I've thought this through, obviously.
Clearly, I would love to do play by play for napping. A lot of action,
a lot of filler
on Peacock. It would be great sitting in a studio in Stamford, Connecticut. As Dustin from his newfound country tries to nap. All right, we will talk more Olympics in a little bit. We have some good guests still to come here. We'll talk with Scott Reichel at 4:30 Eastern. Mick Shillella coming up at 5 Eastern as well. And then John Lobb, our next guest, coming up in 15 minutes to talk some NFL and college football news and future betting angles here at the top of our next hour. But something we did want to hit here, at least early on, it is that time of year where now all of the Dak Prescott conversations are starting with training camp underway to get more into the fold. His future, still no deal done past this year. And it's just funny, Dustin, for a guy who's put up really, really good regular season numbers but has been defined by his struggles and his team struggles in the postseason, that here we go with Prescott. Still unsure, and what really is driving this conversation forward is his comments from yesterday on what he believes to be the case and what he wants to see going forward in Dallas.
I'm going to say it. I want to be here, but, you know, when you look up, all the great quarterbacks I watched played for other teams. So my point in saying that is that that's not something to fear. That may be a reality for me one day, may not be my decision. So that's the freedom that I have is be where your feet are, make the most of it, be confident in yourself, make your team better. I love my teammates. I love that locker room. I love everything about being out here in Oxnard and being a Dallas Cowboy.
And a guy who was second in completion percentage over expectation, plus EPA per play last year. Offense, it was second in yards per drive and sixth in yards per play. Yet people don't care about those things, Dustin, when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys. They do not care about stats. They just care about narrative and general media sort of clickbaity sort of things. And that's always the case with Prescott. That's where we'll start here, at least.
Okay, well, he mentioned other teams, which sparked me to think, what would the market be if he does hit free agency, right? And he has the opportunity to meet with everyone else there. So let's go in division, right? The Giants potentially have an opening. They can get rid of Daniel Jones, but I don't think they would be interested in him. I think they would want their own quarterback to develop, right? It's not often, like, there aren't a lot of situations. Peyton Manning, Matthew Stafford, go out and you add a quarterback via trade or free agency, and it winds up ending in a Super Bowl. Most of these quarterbacks, you win on that rookie window, and you develop them within the system and build around them. So I don't think the Giants would do that. Maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers, who feel like a plug-and-play team, right? Fields and Wilson both potentially gone next year. That could be an option. Tennessee could use a quarterback. New Orleans post-Derek Carr could use a quarterback. Denver could use a quarterback maybe if Bo Nix doesn't look like what Sean Payton expects him to be. Maybe it's the Raiders. Maybe it's Seattle. There is a market for Dak Prescott if the Cowboys want to call his bluff here. I think he could get the money he wants from Dallas somewhere else. It's not one of those deals where the best and only chance is to return and stay a Cowboy.
I think the most underrated one, based on part of his career, based on, you know, where you think about longevity and the way it has gone now down the stretch, it's the Rams with Matthew Stafford. I mean, would it shock anybody if after this year, and we've seen the guy play a lot longer than most people assumed, if Sean McVay, who's very forward-thinking, watching this all play out, a team that he has schemed against and has faced in postseasons of past, seen Prescott up close, a lot of games against him, goes, that's a guy who could work perfectly into my system. That, to me, is the more underrated one, just because most people aren't thinking about the end for Stafford. But, look, we've talked about it every year. I mean, it's not like the back is getting any younger.
No.
It's not like that. It's not like you take fewer hits now, and those have not piled up. That's the one team for me I would keep my eye out on if this does not get done here for Dak.
Well, and let's be fair to Dak. I am very middle of the road on Dak. However, I did tell you I have a binary system for evaluating quarterbacks. Can or can they not win a Super Bowl? And I don't believe you can win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott. However, the addition of Sean McVay to work with Dak, now we're cooking with grease, with gas, whatever the saying is. I don't know why I said grease. Gas. We have a situation there where
loves giant
I
fires.
Think if we're going to be fair to Dak Prescott's career, go look at who's mentored him offensively. Jason Garrett, Mike McCarthy, Kellen Moore. He has not had an offensive mastermind to develop him. If you put him with a real offensive guru, maybe not McVay, maybe someone or just a notch below, he could potentially become a quarterback you could win with.
The advanced numbers all suggest you can win a Super Bowl with Prescott. I believe in that, but whenever a team has failings, and there have been a multitude of reasons for why Dallas has failed in the playoffs, it always comes back to one single human being, and in this case, it's Dak Prescott. We've heard from Dak. How about the Jerry Jones piece of this as owner and really arbiter of all for the Dallas Cowboys? His thought on, really, in general, will Prescott end up being a lame duck quarterback going into this year?
Don't think so. Just to be very specific, I do not think that this will be his last year with the Cowboys at all. Am I being psychotic relative to Mamira? No. I mean, it's pretty clear, I think. I want to say it if it hadn't been clear of how much we appreciate what Dak Prescott has meant to this team in a positive way. And the players do play better when he's out there. He does make his teammates play at a higher level. There's no question about it.
Old Jerry's getting up there.
I was going to say, windows closing for the Cowboys. Windows closing in many ways for Jerry Jones.
Wouldn't you say, though, it's kind of funny. We just talked to Tua Tagovailoa. If you missed that, he just gets the four-year extension. That breaks about 20, 25 minutes ago. In a very similar vein, though, for Dallas, probably the biggest weakness is going to be the offensive line that has seen a lot of players age into that system, a lot of injuries that they have had to deal with. I certainly look at that as a bottom half of the league unit. Dallas is pretty much punting now on the running back position, as much as you want to say, hey, Ezekiel Elliott, get him some get that guy some fresh tread on the tires. I don't think it's there. And it's really just what can Prescott do with a very, very good still wide receiver room, and how much can the defense, I would argue the best defense in the NFC East and a very good special teams unit with a great kicker in Brandon Aubrey, what can Dallas around Prescott do to not put all the pressure solely on his shoulders this year? To me, that's the big question. I still have them behind Philadelphia coming into this year, but it's not like the gap is insurmountable by any means, as much as people want to make you think that.
You just said something that is exactly why I don't believe you can win with Dak. That's what else. You said you want to take the pressure off of him. I think if you have a guy who can win a Super Bowl, you don't have to ever worry about him. He's just going to be that dude all the time. And I'd also ask you, Tua or Dak, who'd you rather have? Feel similar.
Yeah,
different games,
very,
but similar conversation.
I would say if I, all things being equal, and I was confident in my offensive line, I would say Tua.
If you had a bad offensive coordinator, who would you rather have, Dak or Tua?
If you had a terrible offensive coordinator. Honestly, with all the experience, it would be Dak.
Yeah, I think it would be too. I think, like, from a skill standpoint, right?
He's had to just wing it and make stuff happen. I mean, Tua, when it goes off schedule and there's injuries and it's, you know, we're not talking like lab-created perfect offensive system, then it's when it's gotten really ugly. You know, Prescott, it's more been the easy things. It's the simple throws. It's the boneheaded red zone decisions it's probably why you're talking, okay, can you – it's the same thing we talk about with Josh Allen. When you have so many turnover-worthy plays in red zone situations, why people still have their doubts about that sort of positional player long term.
Look, I think Dallas is in a really weird vibe spot at this point with this, because this is hanging over the team. Micah Parsons' contract hanging over the team. CeeDee Lamb's. There's just a lot of talk not about football and expectations and the plan, and that always concerns me this time of year. We should be focusing on football, not the distractions when it comes to these guys' contracts. That is an issue for this franchise at the moment. And I do believe that there's a market out there for Dak, and I think he's going to test it.
I still have Dallas at top, borderline, but I still have him a top 10 team. I would not be saying with all this these negative storylines in the offseason, oh, yeah, go out, bet him plus 170 to miss the playoffs.
No.
It's just not, the value's not there. And similar, again, to like a Miami, it's constructed to be a very good, again, regular season team. We always care about what happens in the postseason. To me, Dallas, at least early in the year, they are certainly a bet on with how much is at stake for them in general this year. That's hour number one in the books. We'll talk a little college football and NFL when we come back on Sharp Money right after this with John Lobb.